Blog Talk Radio.
The motherfucking saga continues.
Yo, yo, what's up, world? It's Badass Thuggin' like I usually do. And you better turn it up, bust some speakers out, cause we off the motherfucking cuff. You dig how we do it? Dog Pound Gangsters 2000 and beyond.
What's up with it, y'all? Man, don't change that sound. This your player partner, the legendary Cocaine. And you tuned in live to Off the Cuff Radio. Better not touch that sound. Wiggly.
Yeah, yeah, this is Cassidy, the hustler. And right now, you listening to the Guillotine. Show them the respect they deserve, man. Off the Cut Radio, man. Y'all already know how they doing it, man. I need y'all to stay tuned. They've been doing it for years. So show them the respect they deserve. And you heard it out of bars, mom. Easy.
Keep it moving like this. Yo, this your boy Rampage. You're not rocking with the best. With Off the Cut Radio. Classic. History. Fix your face to all you haters. We off the cuff, baby.
What's up, everybody? This your girl, Bonnie Dollars, the queen of trap, representing Crenshaw. And you are now tuned in with Off the Cuff Radio. What's up?
What's up, y'all? This is Miss Irresistible, giving a shout-out to the live show on Friday nights, Off the Cuff Radio. And I'm live from the 704. Make sure y'all tune in for the blazing hot music.
What it ain't, what it do. Chilly Chill from that original Lynch Mob. Off the Cuff Radio, always where it's at on Friday night. West West, y'all.
And y'all already know what time it is. Welcome to episode 505 of Off the Cuff Radio. I'm your host, King Eric, the Media Assassin. And this show is sponsored by Fleetwood and the Cot Pickers, Cocaine's Buddy Boy Entertainment, Screwball Radio, Core Financial, and Jesse's Boutique. And I have my co-host, T-Max with the facts in the building. What's good, man?
What it do, y'all. Another fantastic chapter of Off the Cuff Radio. Another fantastic Friday night. And we are live and direct, giving you what you need. And tonight, King, this is a very, 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 very special show. Because we do music. We do entertainment from all sorts. But we also, every so often with this show that we're so blessed to do, we also do human interest stories, and especially this one, celebrating Black woman excellence. The guest we have tonight is a financial maven. She is of the most elite of literacy, keeping your money right. She is a distinguished graduate of Michigan State University. Go Spartans. Out of these Lansing Accords, you know, and she heads up her own firm, The Future Game. And tonight, y'all, she is going to drop so many jewels about financial literacy, about how to be fiscally responsible, and just what comes no matter who you are. You could be a baller, you could be a rapper, you could just be a regular person working 9 to 5, but it's all about making your paperwork to make the paperwork all over to make it work. Without further ado, the beautiful, talented, extraordinary, excellent entrepreneur herself, Miss Morgan Stinson. Hey, lady, what's going on?
Hello. How are you?
We are great. How are you?
That was a great intro, may I say. That was one of the best. I'm going to need that.
That's right.
Look, baby, you know how to reach us. You know, we all there. You know, just hit us, and we'll draw up. We'll draw it up free of charge.
I appreciate it. Well, thank you for having me. Go green, by the way. I heard you repping my home squad. I thank you for having me on the show. I know we've been playing tag for a while, but I appreciate your patience, and I'm happy to be here.
This is an honor and a pleasure, Ms. Stinson, because definitely, like you said, it's been a long time coming, but, you know, I got hip to, you know, you and your company probably last year and a half ago, And one thing about it is we do this show from so many different aspects. We also never forget, first and foremost, the human element, which is so essential. And what you do is of the utmost imperative in terms of this is a life situation in terms of making sure that people's finances are in order. And as I, you know, stated, you know, we stated in the intro, you know, this is something that everybody needs to learn in terms of understanding, no matter what your profession. And wherever, because we know you're out in Vegas right now for the NBA review. We're going to get to that in a minute as well. But definitely we wanted to have you on because we know what you do is so important. We've seen the ESPN documentary Broke. So we know how these things happen. We've read it for so many years, how athletes, how rappers, they end up losing money along the way because they over-speculate. I don't want to get ahead of myself because we want to keep a lot of the juicy tidbits as we go along in the show, so we want to pace it. We'll start like we always do about that time. The floor is yours. Tell us a little bit about yourself and, you know, from where you grew up, how you started, how you chose Michigan State, you know, as your school, and everything beyond that. Let's get it.
Well, yeah. Well, I appreciate it. So, I'm Morgan Stinson. A lot of people know me as Morgan Elizabeth. But I'm from Detroit, Michigan. I was born and raised in Detroit. My family was historic. Right, exactly. You know, what up, though, as we like to say. But my family was embedded in the city from a young age. My dad was an entrepreneur. My mom was a single mom, but she was an entrepreneur as well. So a lot of the teachings that I learned from them, you know, I carried that through to, like, my decision in life to become an accountant and financial advisor. But, you know, when I decided to, throughout my life, my career, I've always made it a point to understand how the knowledge that I had the privilege of gaining can be passed beyond just me, right? And so when I started the Future Game, which is what you spoke of, and we'll get to that, but the reason why I started that platform and the way I put it together is I wanted to give financial education that was appealing to people of all ages from ethnic backgrounds. So whether that be the athlete, which is just the profile, but mainly their families, their friends, and things of that nature, because we come from one community at the end of the day. So when I look at the turbulent times of my family, I think back to just that's the normal Black family to me. You know, there's ups, there's downs, there's, you know, great times, there's times where, you know, your mom may not have known exactly where you were going to be, you know, next week. And so when I thought about that, it's like, how can I, the privilege of, I went to Michigan State for my undergrad in finance, go green. So I'm a Spartan till I die. And then I went to Georgia State to get my master's in accounting. And it wasn't until that point that I realized, oh my God, you know, so many people need this education and this knowledge, but they didn't have the privilege of getting it in college, right? Because nobody in my class looked like me. I was like one of few. So when I went to Michigan State, why did I choose Michigan State? Because it was the party school, I'm not going to lie, you know. I got a few schools, but I was like, I want to do great at education and still have fun, you know what I'm saying? So my brother actually went to U of M, so we have a split household. So it's very interesting.
That maize and blue and the green and white. I know those dinners are interesting. It comes holiday time.
Exactly. Yeah, Thanksgiving is very fun, and my dad has to put on a T-shirt that's like split down the middle. It's great. It's just really good. But So when I went to Michigan State, I started working for the basketball team. Well, I worked for Tom Izzo for 3 years, him and the rest of the coaches. And so a lot of what we do is player development, like helping with recruiting and things of that nature, and then around the office. So I was in school for finance, and I just realized how many guys were in school for, like, communications or, like, some major that they would never use. Like, it was just, you know, at the end of the day, it's just a reason for you to have your scholarship or continue your scholarship while you play basketball. And I was like, damn, that's crazy because all of the stuff that I'm learning now is, like, things that people need to know as soon as they graduate. Like, they're so, like, you can't learn this, you know, when you're, you know, 25. You need to know this now. And so I just started talking to, like, my friends that played and, like, you know, telling them stuff that I got from class. Like, I was always, like, the cool girl. I played sports. I was around sports. So I was able to deliver my knowledge in a way that wasn't daunting. You know, it wasn't like sitting in the class. It was just like, yo, did you know about this? Like, you need to know. When you get your W-2, when you graduate and go to the league, like, you know, you're going to have to pay taxes on that. You know, like, you're just talking about, like, you know, stuff that makes it cool. So at the end of the day, that's why I created the Future Game, because I wanted to have that similar platform. Like, there's a lot of minorities in these fields. We are elite mm-hmm. talent. Like, we've studied. We got all of our credentials. Like, we're here, and we understand a lot of the things that people with money or that want to obtain some sort of wealth or understanding around their finances that can go just beyond them, right? When we leave this life, what are we leaving behind? So a lot of times black people leave a mess. They leave a mess, and you have to clean it up. Yeah. And if you don't know how to clean it up, that makes it even more difficult. That's just more stress, right? Not just on you, but on the entire family. And so instead of creating moments like that, let's stop creating moments like that. Let's figure out how we can create moments where our families know that, you know, grandma passes away, grandma's house goes to this person, that person, her finances are here, her debt is there. Whatever the case is, let's just make sure that our community is stronger, because the knowledge that we have, that is something that can definitely transcend our community, our black community especially. But that's really why I do what I do. And, yeah, that's a little bit about me in a nutshell. But, yeah, that's kind of where my vision has always lied, and I'm just working hard to do that. So, yeah, I'm here in Vegas for the NBA Summer League, trying to pass my knowledge down to some of these young boys that have already – some of them have already hit contracts with NIL deals now that we're seeing come into the market, and some of them are about to.
We're going to get into that later. Yeah.
Yeah, and some of them are about to sign some of the biggest deals of their life, or just did. So, you know, trying to catch them early, because, you know, catching them late is usually what happens for us. So.
Definitely. One thing about it too, Morgan, is when we think about financial literacy in the black community. And you being an athlete, you know, yourself, and especially because, you know, you and me, you know, King, we all chopped it up a little bit before we actually got on the show a couple months, but we did not know that you actually weren't as involved in the basketball team as much as you were. Watching the interview you did with Draymond, it was so organic. People have their things about Draymond, but one thing about it is Draymond is great at what he does. He's a future Hall of Famer. And to hear them, you know, to hear you all interact on YouTube, with that interview you all did, because we're going to get to the other ones as well with Jeff Walker and, of course, you know, Matt Barnes. But it was so organic, and Draymond dropped so many jewels, you know, in terms of where a lot of us come from in the hood, you know, where we are around. We got to keep it real and off the cuff, as we always do. The time of the athlete, the black athlete especially, from what we had 50 years ago, from the paychecks to the home environment, is way different now than it, what it is now. You know, the money is exponentially mm-hmm. larger, but also to the surroundings. I mean, we look at a lot of the street element that has really, really came in, you know, and a lot of times, as we will get into later on with the show, we've seen a lot of athletes, unfortunately, get into some things over the years that they didn't quite understand the gravity of what it meant once you get an opportunity. For example, like Jabaris Crittenden that played for Georgia Tech. You remember that story? When he got involved in the gangs in L.A. And then, for our listeners that don't know, what quite happened. This is just an anecdotal in terms of how you have to understand the position you're in, but when you don't, and that he, anyway, what happened was he got involved with a crib game out of L.A. Now, mind you, he's not from California, and he got involved with a gang. He got robbed, and, you know, and anybody call in or body check me in the comments when we upload this on YouTube. But anyway, he got robbed, and apparently the situation that came one day where he assaulted individuals and robbed him, and he, you know, had his burner with him, and he let off, and an innocent woman got killed in the crossfire, and he's doing life in prison. I think he had played for the Wizards at one point. Matter of fact, this is the same Javaris Crittenden that they got into it with Gilbert Arenas, where they pulled guns on each other in the locker room.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that part. So, yeah, but a lot of times there's the hood that a lot of our brothers come from, but they can't get the hood out of them. And, you know, just like when we talk about rappers as well, this is the job that you do. When you look at the situation of being a financial advisor / accountant, you also, some people mistake that as agent. Please give our audience the designation between agent and financial planner, advisor / accountant. What are those differences?
I mean, so what I like to say is we all play as a team, right? And so the agent is the person that negotiates your deal with whatever said team that you play for. Some agencies take on marketing type opportunities with Nike or some big brands. They don't usually focus on smaller brands, but they do have like some opportunities that they pass back through their clients, but they get a percentage off of your contract.
3%, correct?
And then it can be up to 3%. It's just whatever they usually negotiate.
Gotcha.
But, yeah, it can be up to 3%. And in most cases, like the NBA, your agent can't be your financial advisor. There's a rule in there that prohibits that, because then you're, you know, we like to say that you're eating off both sides of the plate. Like, what are you doing? So,
Understood.
Your financial advisor is a CFA. So usually, well, we like to say they're either a CFA or CFP, which is Certified Financial Planner. And that person is the one that handles your investment portfolio, your investments, budgets, any type of like insurance or asset acquisitions that you have throughout the year. And then your CPA, which is your accountant, or your business manager.
Right.
Yeah, when your business manager should be a CPA too. That person handles like your day-to-day business operations. So like your bank accounts, making sure you have your license and stuff together, any payroll that you issue. So setting up, you know, you're making sure that your family or whoever is working for you is paid. And basically they handle your day-to-day operations. We call them like, it's almost like in the talent world, it's like a talent manager, but it's a financial manager. So we manage everything day to day. And that's usually like the core three people that I say you need on your team to work together to make sure that, you know, everything's in order or in check. Now, you know, for smaller people that don't require all of that day to day type of attention, they just need a good accountant. So someone that can review their stuff per quarter, give them an update, and then file their taxes for them. And then as you grow, you know, a business manager is definitely something that you should take on, because at the end of the day, if you're messed up financially or you don't know what's coming, that's usually when things all start to go in disarray, you know?
Yeah. And one thing about it too, Morgan, we've seen situations, you know, and of course you mentioned, you know, agents. So I got to shout out one of my childhood friends, Alvin Keels, representing, you know, Chesapeake, you know, Hampton Roads, Virginia, who's a sports agent himself. Good guy. I'm 44 years old, and I've known Alvin pretty much damn near my whole life. Got to shout out, you know, him and his brother Aaron, tremendous family. You know, the kids are doing great. He was featured years ago on you know, I believe, what was it? What was that joint that they used to do on HBO when they would do the talent? They would do the they would do the you know, they would do the preseason in terms of following the teams and for the Bengals, and he was out there. I think he was representing Levi Brown, who was a Penn,
okay,
who was from here as well and went to Penn State. So, you know, they were talking about he was in there, I believe, in a segment negotiating his contract and everything. We've seen a lot of agents, of course. Shout out to Leonard Armato, you know, who was Shaq's longtime agent. Of course, you know,
I just
course,
did an interview
Falk.
With him. Mm-hmm.
Okay, yeah. Of course, David Falk, you know, Jordan's agent. Arm Tellem, you know, when you look at situations, Morgan, in terms of picking the right people, and on this show, we do not slander anybody. We only speak the facts. We hold ourselves to a high journalistic standard of getting it right as close as we can, if not 100% right. We saw the situations happen with Fred Taylor years ago with his agent, Frank Tank Black. I think you remember that, where they found out that Black had embezzled a whole bunch of money from a lot of his clients and subsequently went to prison behind that.
I mean, you know, you can't really...
Go ahead.
You can't fully trust anybody, you know? So I always say, like, it takes two to tango, you know? If you're not really paying attention to your finances and you're making yourself an easy target, it doesn't matter if they're white, black, green, or brown. Like, they're going to take from you. So
right.
Whenever I, you know, have my clients or even just talking to guys that are just young people, like, if you're not paying attention, like, that's on you. You got to admit where you play the part. Pay attention to your finances. Like, at least know enough to be dangerous. You don't have to be a genius to figure out if somebody, come on now, guys are getting, like, they're getting robbed blind. Like, over the years, somebody took $8 million from you. How did you not know that somebody took $8 million from you? Like, you know, you got to coach from a way, from a perspective that really lets people know, like, you have to be paying attention. And so I always, you know, I'm going to give you too much information, and it may be too much for you, but at the end of the day, this is what's going to save you in the end. Because, and then I always say, like, get an independent check. There is nothing wrong with saying, like, all right, Joe, thanks. I'm going to go over here and see Bob and ask him, you know, my homie, like, well, how does it look? You know what I mean? It's okay to you don't just go to one doctor and get one opinion, right? You go to three.
Right.
And you go to, so do the same with whatever your financial health as well. Like, get a reference, you know, ask questions. A lot of it is guys are scared, you know, to even feel like they didn't know something, you know, or they didn't catch something, you know. So, but it's, you got to be on top of your stuff. So I always, whenever I'm dealing with a client, I always lead from a place of education, because it's like, if you're not going to care about this, then best believe somebody else is going to treat you like that. So.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Think,
yeah.
Also what happens,
go ahead,
too. I think what also happens, too, is a lot of people just, like y'all was talking about, they come from deprived neighborhoods and they develop the poverty mindset. Because I've seen people that will literally, they don't have the patience to even look over a contract. And them contracts be long.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm talking about a lot of double reading and a lot of decimals and numbers. But at the same time, they look at it like, yo, we'll just go ahead and sign it to get it over when we're ready to get on. Not knowing a lot of the ramifications that come with that deal, like a lot of that back end money, they just look at it like, oh, we signed a bonus, not knowing you got to pay all that back with interest.
It's a dirty game. Like, athletics has always been a dirty game, you know. So, I mean, hell, they didn't even want to let us in for a long time. You got to remember, like, it's at the top, it's even cloudier. So you just got to be on your shit. Like, if somebody, that's like if somebody walked in and said, like, here you go, here's $5 million. Like, you're just going to take it and just think that you know everything to do with it. Like, come on now. Like, let's be, let's be real, you have to surround yourself with educated people, but you also have to make an effort to educate yourself off of them. You know, like, use them. That's why we're here. So that's how we
And also not be able to be important, not be afraid to ask questions. I think a lot of people have the ego. They don't want to check the ego at the door. They don't want to be looking at, oh, I don't know what's going on. I might look inferior, so I'm just going to go ahead and just pretend like I am. When in reality, you don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I was just having this conversation with somebody, telling them, like, if you think about an athlete's, like, lifespan, right? So you're told from, like, basically you start out in, what, middle school? So you're studying here and there. You're doing good in school. You're paying attention a little bit. But realistically, like, that's when it kicks in that I got to be serious about sports, right? Then you go to high school, and basically they help you get, you know, through there with tutoring and all that extra stuff. But really now it's like, okay, if you do good at this, then you can go to college free, you know, and play, go to the league or whatever. So you're told to focus on football. So then when you get to college and they don't teach you anything about finances, like zero, they got you in a communications class learning how to, like, give little tiny 5-minute speeches to the rest of your class. Okay, great. But by the time you learn about anything like a bank account, credit, taxes, what a 401k is, by the time all that happens, what are you, 25, 24 maybe? So, and then I think about, when did I start focusing on finances and educating myself on, like, businesses and making money? Okay, I started that at the end of high school, as soon as I went to college. So you can never catch up. You can never catch up. There's not enough time for you to catch up. So what does that look like for you? You know, so that I hate the fact that, you know, a lot of education systems are really set up to not help us win at the end of the day. And it's unfortunate, because until we can fix that, there's really just such a huge gap that I just don't know if we'll ever be able to mend. At least not in my lifetime. Maybe somebody after me can do it. But I'm gonna get it. Yeah. I'm gonna try and get it as far as I can take it, right?
look, you Harriet Tubman leading everybody to the North Star of financial freedom in terms of understanding. You know, you used to join her with the truth. You know, you journey into the facts. And the fact is, you know, King and Morgan, when we look at how a lot of the money has, you know, changed over the years. You know, I remember back in the day when Magic Johnson, a distinguished alum of yours.
Right.
You know,
go Green.
When he signed his deal with the Lakers, I believe in 1979 when he was drafted, they signed him for a 10-year deal for like $10 million, if I got my facts right. And everybody was like, oh my, I mean, look, this is like 70s money. This is 70s going to the 80s. So this was like absurd, you know.
Yeah.
You know,
guys are making like $43 million a year. It's insane.
Yeah. You know, I mean, I remember back in 1991 when Patrick Ewing signed, I think, a 4-year extension with the Knicks for $33 million. And at that time, it was the highest contract in sports. I mean, we remember when A-Rod back in 2000 signed his deal with the Rangers for $250 million over 10 years. You know, I mean, we were like, the numbers were just mind-boggling because we couldn't quite fathom, as sports became more and more lucrative in terms of the opportunities. You know, of course, we saw these mega stadiums being built, the money, you know, the way that athletes really were bringing in that money, it was obviously more to go around, and obviously they became an investment. When you think about it from a perspective of what it was like back then, watching Broke on ESPN, you know, shout to Herm Edwards, you know, Herm was talking about, you know, back in the day when he was playing, you know, NFL players had summer jobs because, you know, I think some of them were only making like maybe $5,000, $10,000, $20,000 a year, you know, maybe less than that, you know. So he's like, so they were asking, like, you know, they play, like, they asked, what did we do when we were playing? He's like, guys worked. You know, they had other jobs. You know,
Not anymore.
Yeah, we got to realize, too, that where I really started seeing big money coming in was right the early part of the 90s, where we seen 93, 94, I would say, when you seen guys like Eric Coleman and Glenn Robinson, they was getting like 15 to 20 million. Then Larry Johnson.
Yeah, Glenn Robinson, when he got signed by Milwaukee back in 1994 in the draft, and he signed a 10-year deal for $68 million. I remember that, yeah.
And Larry Johnson signed that monster deal. I remember this.
$84 million. $84 million extension. Yeah, there was an $84 million deal that Alonzo. Shout out Alonzo Mourning, because he Indian River alum. He went to my high school, and of course, you know, there was supposedly that funk between him and Larry because of that, and that's when Alonzo got traded to Miami, where they gave him that $105 million, which would lead to Shaq getting next year when he went to the Lakers that $120 million. You know,
and this also ties into the question: is do you feel that when the salary cap got busted wide open, you think that hurt the game or that hurt the players in terms of financial literacy?
No, I don't think so, because, I mean, honestly, I mean, would you rather, we saw a lot of going broke stories. We don't really see those stories as much anymore. I mean, we see guys blowing a lot of money, but there's obviously way more money to go around now, but we saw a lot of struggle, you know, like, even though we valued money so much differently back then, I will say that, I think that the level of opportunity now for players to unlock, especially from a monetary perspective, is not bad for financial literacy. It more so eases the struggle, you know. But what I will say is, like, the age that you are able to obtain the amount of monetary wealth that you can obtain now in 2022, that has drastically slid down. So that's the only part that I see hurting it. It's not the number, because, I mean, money is money. When back then, you know, $83 million sounds crazy, and now, you know, $83 million is like a normal, like, 3-year deal, you know. So I don't think it's necessarily the amount or, like, the fact that they cracked a salary cap, but I think that the age that they're now allowing for people to obtain that amount of wealth is definitely one of the negative impacts. So yeah, they got to deliver some education down at that level, because they got some kids out here making like millions of dollars. It's like, what the heck? These are kids.
Yeah, you know, and I mean, you know, when you look at back in the day, you know, with of course in the NBA, because this is where we really, like you said, like what you and King said about how it changes. You know, when we look at Bill Willoughby, Moses Malone, who came out of high school, you know, I believe Daryl Dawkins came out of high school as well, going straight to the league. That was considered revolutionary back then, you know, for, you know, not necessarily going to college to further education more than it was about pursuing and realizing the dream. And, you know, they did pretty well, you know, in terms of, you know, you don't hear, with those guys, I don't think you hear anything, I haven't heard anything about them, you know, having any issues financially. You know, rest in peace, Daryl Dawkins, of course. You know, but when we look at what happened with LeBron, I mean, Kevin Garnett, you know, he was the first in 95 in some years to do it since Willoughby did it. And when Kevin Garnett came out of high school out of Farragut in Chicago, I mean, you know, he was serious, you know. And when we saw LeBron, I mean, God, LeBron literally changed the game. I mean, him and Kobe both. But Kobe, where it took him a while to really learn it, because Kobe always had the talent. It was just when it was really come, you know, it was a couple years then where it would really bloom for him. But you figure, we look at a guy like LeBron, LeBron was in the front line of celebrity since he was 15 years old. And I mean, when you look at it now, this man is 38. He has lived over half of his life in the public spotlight, has hit billionaire status, You know, him, Tiger, and Michael are, you know, and you know, LeBron is the first active billionaire, you know, still playing. But obviously that comes, and of course it doesn't hurt to have Warren Buffett as a good friend of yours either. You know, and of course JC as well. You know, I mean, the guy to start, you know, part of the Rock, you know, with Jay, and of course the man who founded Mutual of Omaha. You know, when you look at guys like that, it kind of gave a false sense of security to a lot of our young brothers out there thinking that they would be able to do the same thing, you know, at that time where they were. We saw for every LeBron James and Kobe Bryant, we unfortunately had a Corleone Young and a Leon Smith, you know, who were not psychologically ready to do it. And while the physical ability may have been there to a degree, psychological aspect of understanding that responsibility was not there. When you look at how it is now, Morgan, in terms of where the game has changed, the aesthetics of society, how the youth are looking at it, what have you found in your experience of how a lot of these young players from any sport view their ability to play the game in terms of their prospects of going pro? How many of them have a realistic understanding that I need to know something else because this may not work out for me versus the ones who just think I'm going to do this, and not only am I going to do this, I'm going to do this for a long time and be successful in it?
I think that the language of business and the language of money has definitely evolved. I think a lot of that evolution has come with, like, the Robin Hoods and just how the way that money operates has definitely, and the access to do that has definitely changed. I mean, when I was a kid, you couldn't go on your phone and buy stock or talk about, you know, trades and things of that nature. That wasn't, like, a conversation. You also couldn't stream for hours and make money on platforms like Twitch and things of that nature. So I think that kids that are younger, of course, they connect money to things, you know, the way that the evolution of the conversation has transcended money comes with things, right? So if I have money, then I can go buy this, or I can go look like this rapper or do this or buy this piece of jewelry. And so I think that there's a lot more emphasis on having it and obtaining it. I think that there's less work ethic as far as, you know, you had to get a job back in the day. Now you can just, you know, monetize off of TikTok or some crap that, you know, create an NFT and sell it or game online. So it's very lazy opportunity, but nonetheless, like, the generation has changed, right? And so I think that the conversation has changed. I think that there's still a lack of education as to, like, how you treat that money and what the repercussions of having it could be and not treating it correctly. But I don't think that as, you know, the generations get younger, I'm proud to say that, you know, when we were growing up, we didn't quite crack the code of how to be, like, the entrepreneur generation that amassed amazing amounts of wealth. And in this technology generation, or whatever we're calling Gen Z or Gen X, whatever they are next, you know, they literally have the opportunity, the resources, the access to be the next financial superpowers at, you know, 22. And I think that there is something, a power that they realize that they have. I just don't know if, you know, our generation is doing their part to impart the knowledge that they need to really learn from maybe some of the missteps that we had, right? And so that's why we see a lot of political outlash. We see a lot of, like, this recession or this crazy inflation, like, how do you deal with that? These are things that we've never seen in our lifetime. And so understanding how we still are able to impart knowledge on the younger generation, I think that that's the key to bridging the gap, and also to just giving them the reins to, hey, y'all got it from here, you know what I mean? So I think that's more of where I see the challenges, and then also the opportunity for growth.
Yeah. And when we look at this age now, it's so much emphasis in terms of being not only a star athlete for your team, but also the social media aspect of marketing as well. We're going to get into that in a minute. I remember years ago when Shaq, because it's about, like you said, you know, it's funny, shout out to Big Shaq, the big Aristotle, you know, Dr. Shaquille O'Neal. He had talked about years ago, like back in 92, when he first signed his deal with the Magic, and he went out and like blew a million. I think he said he had blew $1 million within the first 30 minutes. And then his accountant called him like, what the hell are you doing? You know, and that's because I think he had went out and bought a couple of Mercedes and a couple of other things, and his accountant got on the phone with like, yo, no.
Yeah.
That's when Shaq was talking to him. That's when he had that talk, you know, about how, you know, he had to save his money, because Shaq, you know, I think he's playfully capping, but he might be real with it, because he says he has not to this day spent any of his basketball money. He says all the money he spent has come from his endorsements, of course, which were plentiful. You know, what he had with, of course, Reebok at the time, of course, what he had with Pepsi. you know, so, but it's important to understand that the game is not going to last forever. We've seen unfortunate situations like Robert Edwards of the New England Patriots, former running back, who dislocated his kneecap in an off-season NFL event on the beach. Casey Jones, a center, used to play for Miami. He had tore his ACL, I think, when getting to the league. Of course, Matt Russell, former center for the Colorado Buffaloes, I think he tore his, he got to the league, I think it was for the Lions he played, and he tore his ACL one year, then he sat out, fucked around, and the next year tore the other one. And of course, Kejana Carter coming out of Penn State, you know, so there's a lot of successes. We've seen a lot of the casualties as well. Yeah, well, not so much Buzz King, but just the unfortunate circumstances of those casualties of injuries that can end the career before it actually gets off the ground. And that's why, you know, fortunately, you know, there are, you know, a lot of times when those injuries do happen, Morgan, what are usually the insurance clauses teams have in terms of, because, of course, Clinton Portis, when he played for the Miami Hurricanes, when he tore his knee, he had $1 million insurance policy, which was contingent he would collect on it if he never played football again. But he forewent, you know, which was a great parachute for him. But then he decided to go into the draft because he's like, football is what he wanted to do, and he wanted to make his money. It's an aside because also he got himself in some issues financially and got himself in some trouble with the law where he lost his money as well. But as an aside, how do these contracts usually are structured in terms of, you know, where you set them up for the insurance elements of it in terms of injury, you know, in the most worst of scenarios, death for an athlete, and how do you make sure all this money is allotted in terms of the family, that there are no issues and it's written right there, yo, this is what this family is going to get after this is done?
Well, I don't actually handle any of the insurance stuff, but
okay,
so I work with several other service providers. And, you know, your team has insurance. We make sure that your financial, we call them financial assets because insurance is technically an asset now. So making sure that you have, you know, the league is going to take care of what they need to take care of. And then, of course, you're going to have your own personal insurance that you have on yourself for your family and injuries and things of that nature. But we make sure that, you know, that you have the appropriate life insurance as collaterals for as money vehicles, as well as if anything happens to you and you pass away, that your family is taken care of. And then also life insurance, you know, you can put in and take out without significant penalty, depending on what you're using it for. So we do use that as a vehicle to, you know, move money around or make sure that we're saving for certain things. So there's a lot of things that you can do with financial tools, but as far as making sure that their family is taken care of and that things go smooth, you know, we really just try and make sure that you have a living trust, you know, you have a will, you have an estate plan. If you're at that point, a lot of times we'll just make sure that at least you have, you know, a living will to designate, you know, if you have a house, once you purchase a house, things of that nature, like making sure that your family is set up so they're not, like, fighting over unnecessary stuff. But thank God I haven't had to deal with any injured exit athletes yet. So I'm going to just cross and hope that that doesn't happen.
They prayed up.
Right. Yeah. But, you know, you really just have to tell people, like, you got to plan, like, you know, plan for if it was to end tomorrow. You know, if this season was your last season, what would happen? If all you did was get your guaranteed money out of your contract, would you be okay? And a lot of those answers are usually no. And so making sure that, you know, that's something where we start and focus on is a big piece of just start your financial wellness journey and making sure that you are okay when you go to sleep at night. Like, you don't have to wake up and be like, damn, my light's going to be turned off. Who pays the light bill? You know, like, let's know those type of things as we are, you know, becoming adults. It's really training men to be adults, honestly. That's a lot of what goes into it because, unfortunately, we just don't have the knowledge in our families to pass down to the younger generation to say, like, hey, this is all the things you need to know. We just keep telling you, like, play your basketball. Oh, but do you know how to pay your phone bill? Do you know how to fill out a loan application? No, those are not things that you know how to do. So if you don't want to learn those things now, that's fine, but you should at least know what the process is. You know, so I can understand if you don't want to have time to do the execution, but you're going to at least going to sit here and actually know what a loan application is, what are some keywords, like interest rates. You know what that is? You know, so we start with, like, some people really have to go back to basic education, and that's okay. But, you know, you got to have somebody that's willing to give that. And unfortunately, you know, a lot of us have been trained that we can only have one black face at the table. And that's something that I really work in my profession to change. Like, I make sure that I surround my team by minority professionals, a lot of women, just making sure that other people have opportunity to shine because, you know, there's room for all of us at the table, and the more that are at the table, that's how we really flip this MF over. So, you know, I'm all about that. So that's why I just really make sure that, you know, athletes and people that of color that are seeking financial advice know that we're here for you, we do exist, and here's how you can find us, you know?
Yeah. When we look at it from that end of it, because it's important, when we look at the late great Prince, you know, with his situation passing, and he did not have a will.
Or Aretha Franklin. Aretha Franklin was a big one. I was like, ooh, girl, you had your stuff is a mess.
And I mean, this is something where, you think, and a lot of times, because whether you're a rapper, and I got to say this, too, because this shout out to our man, Big Mike, the jeweler up in New York. Great guy. We had him on a couple of years ago. He didn't drop the athlete's name, but he's like, you know, for those that don't know, depending on the jewelry store you go to, Raffello and Company, you know, Icebox, you know, Jacob. A lot of times these companies are already multi-million dollar makers, and they do have a in-house line of credit that you can apply for if you want to buy something, even if you don't necessarily have the cash right then, which is why, once again, you have to maintain your FICO score. You know, try to keep it, you know, in the high 700s, you know, you get an 800 to 900, you got perfect credit in theory on the numbers. You know, that's a deeper conversation in terms of having manageable debt, in terms of if you have a credit card, you can keep it going as long as you pay it on time, pay it off every month. But as long as you keep paying, it shows that you are not being delinquent with your bills, and whatever bills you do accumulate on it, you are paying it, and it shows that you are responsible. This helps build credit. That's how it is established. You know, doesn't mean get stupid with it, because that's what Mike said. Something happened to an athlete who tried to, they ran his credit for a piece of jewelry, and he got turned down.
Morgan, he was adamant as king. Remember when he said that he was like, he wasn't going to tell who the athlete was, and he's like,
because if I give a hint in terms of he signed a big contract, he was like, y'all going to know exactly who I'm talking about when I say it. So, but he was like, yo, but we was bugging because it was like, it was a situation that, you know, because a lot of people think that because athletes have money and we, you know, me and my brother King, we talk about this on air, off air. The difference between rap money and sports money is there's a contract in sports money. You know how much you're going to get. You know, that's been
the rap money, they get that money out the street.
Well, and rap table. Money, too, is, yeah, and see, the corporate money in terms of rap is totally different because those contracts are structured so much differently now. We're looking at 360 deals, where back in the day that was unheard of for a label to eat off of your merchandising or your road trip, you know, money you made. But now it's like, and now with streaming coming in, shout out to our brother from Kansas City, Young Con the Don. Morgan, I got to see the link to that show because the way he broke down the math on how these artists make this money on streaming, I mean, you being a numbers girl, you would love it. You would love it.
Yeah, I just saw that they said somebody won like a lawsuit against Spotify to win more, to have more money coming through their streams. That's a big win because the streams is outrageous. The internet is crazy. It has definitely changed every single industry we've ever been a part of.
Yeah, and see, the thing is, a lot of these artists think getting on to it, that it's like, well, you know, I'm streaming, you know, I'm doing this. I'm like, well, the fact is, you know, King and myself are from an older generation. So from the metrics that we knew of success in music, we just knew it from the end of artists made money off the records they sold. Now, we're going to give our audience some game here because the average record, rest in peace, Whitney Houston, like those artists like that, Mariah, you know, any of those big artists, they usually get about $1 and $1.50 per album sold. That was like, if you could negotiate your shit to get that much off of a record sale and you sold $5 million, you just made $5 million. But then, you know, of course, the label made like $20 million. And they probably made more after they took out expenses in terms of, you know, the budget, in terms of recording, then promoting, and everything else. But a lot of times, some of these new artists coming in, they would only make like maybe 25 or 30 cents an album sold. You know, I mean, this is how the record game, this is what the Locks were talking about on that skit, Raping You Records, you know, which we all know what they were talking about. Yeah. Mm. You know, so a lot of times with these artists coming in, we see the situation with a lot of them because for a young artist coming into the game, it's just like a young athlete. They think they're going to come in and they're going to just do a lot of damage in a good way, you know, making all this. But I'm like, no, this takes time. You know, the independent route, we would tell artists, but we can't tell nobody what to do, but we know both sides of it. Shout out to all of our, you know, friends, family who are in the game, who we get so much wisdom from their experience. Cocaine, Spice One, South Central Cartel, Sav did it, Trop Da Vinci, so many. We can't even name all. Angela Covington, we can't name all of them. You know, Dyer Lansky, Big Hutch from Above the Law. But it's like, but they give us game about how when you get in it, how you have to know what you're signing. And if you're a young artist coming in, it's like being an athlete. You just want to play. You just want to get out there and be seen. You don't necessarily care how it happens. You just want it to happen. And that's the fallacy. You know, you got to know the business. because if you sign to a major label, next thing you know, you're getting everything taken out of your and the next thing you know, you don't work and you don't have anything. Or you may end up like MC Hammer. You make $30, $70 million, but you lose all of it because you start spending it on everything. I know I'm just being long-winded here, so we got to give it back to you, Morgan. In terms of when we see athletes, in terms of once they get the money and then they want to be, we'll start with entrepreneurship part first before we actually get into the crazy spending of what they actually want to go out and buy. What investments are sound in terms of where their money needs to go? Well, should go, rather, in terms of what is sound, because we see some want to do restaurants, some want to start a car detailing like Lenny Dykstra, but we know how that situation ended up with those businesses he did. Some want to do even start a record label. You know, but what do athletes have to understand about how to invest their money in terms of where to start in terms of something sensible before they become, and what type of temperament does it take to become a real entrepreneur?
Well, I think that that's a great question. I think that, you know, athletes who worry too much about like jump starting or diving into some sort of industry of business that they've never been a part of too quickly, that's never a good idea. I always encourage them to, you know, think consciously of things that they like, right? Because I'm a firm believer of you shouldn't just open a car wash unless you really want to. Did you have a passion about cars or something that you wanted to expel? Like, pick something that you like to do, because at the end of the day, if you don't like to do it, then you're not going to pay attention to it, right? And so really kind of grow into yourself before you start making decisions about being an entrepreneur, because being an entrepreneur, it sounds so great. Like, we love this word, right? But what we don't realize is all of the work behind entrepreneurship. Am I wrong?
Sure.
Like, there's no days off. There's no PTO. There's no I'll do it later. It's like... night and day. You have to invest your time, your energy into being an entrepreneur. And so I hate when people say like, oh, I want to own I remember back in the day, everybody was telling their guys to invest in like fast food chains like Dunkin' Donuts and McDonald's, and you know, that worked for, like, the Herb Washingtons of the world, too. You know, they came up in the 80s, and, you know, you're the first black baseball millionaire, so you buy into McDonald's. Like, that's great, you know, but we're in 2022, you know, the 90s. Like, that doesn't really work. So I always tell athletes, like, especially younger ones, you know, first, like, grow into yourself. Understand what you like. Like, if you like to shop, all right, well, let's figure out how we can embed that into something that you're going to invest in, whether that, if that's not starting your own clothing line, maybe that's just being, you know, endorsing, or, you know, everybody is a model nowadays, that since the Migos have become like the fashion icon of rap music, I have said, you know, you can really do anything, but let's figure out what you like to do. And so I always start there. And then secondly is risk. Like, let's understand how much money you have. What's your spending habits? Like, are you like, I spend a lot of money on food every day? Or are you like, oh, I want to have the big boss house that everybody can just come to my house so I don't have to leave? You know, every person is very different in what they like as far as their lifestyle. So let's understand what that looks like first before I just say like, okay, let's start investing your money here and there and things of that nature. Because you could make, I don't know, let's say like a guy makes $2 million. So after taxes, he makes like 1.5 or 1.3. And so if that's your, you know, if that's going to be your trajectory for the next 3 years, and we decide that you need at least 100,000 or 200,000 a year, and then growing as you progress to like live out your lifestyle for the year, okay, well, now, you don't really have that much money right now that you need to be invested too much. You know what I'm saying? Like, we can go with the traditional 401k and maybe find some other investment vehicles. Like, as you get endorsement deals, we can change the game plan that we produce for the athlete. But, like, you have to be really conscious of where you are in life and where you want to be, because fitting entrepreneurship into that, it has to meld into your lifestyle of your day-to-day, so it doesn't feel like you're going outside of yourself or extending, like, extra energy that you don't have for something that's not going to really withstand your lifestyle. Like, buying just a dry cleaner, that's not going to give you 200, you know, the 500,000 that you need at that point to substantiate your family for the year. Maybe we need to find something else that can work now while you can't really focus on it. And then when we get to that point where you're like, okay, you know what? I have a guy that said, like, he really loved, like, putting things into technology. So, like, he built a for-profit, like, technology shared workspace after he retired. And so, like, people come from all over and they share this workspace and they all work in technology. And so he just makes money off of, like, the real estate, the building, like, and the membership, which is great for him. And so, but finding that unique thing that fit his profile, like, that took him growing into himself to understand, okay, this is what I like to be around, this is the environment, and I can see myself going to work after quitting something that I've done for a lifetime. I can see myself going to work every day and being happy with that. What does that look like? Because that's what I want to service. I don't really care too much about, you know, if you want to just, I don't know, open something just because, you know, so that's really where I try and focus, like, guys' attention and energy, because I feel like that's really where the sweet spot is. That's where the soft spot of any person is. And so just relating them back to being a human, like you said in the beginning, making sure that they feel like a respected human, and that within yourself, that, you know, that helps everybody around you. So
it's like what Draymond was saying in the interview you had with Draymond about how you have to give yourself time to grow into who you are. You know, when he had made his house purchase, and he was submitted some years in before he actually did it because of making that financial commitment in terms of, you know, basically understanding the type of house you have, property taxes, depending where you live, in terms of understanding the communities you stay in, the rules with that, because some communities, we're going to give you all some more game, because on Off the Cuff, we come from the Al Haymon gang of game and helping people out. Al Haymon, of course, y'all know, is advisor / manager for Floyd Mayweather Jr. Haymon gang over here. We're shamelessly promoting him. You know, but but one thing about it is, but you know, in some places where you live, like some of these gate communities that you live in, like, a lot of these people need to know this, because when you're talking about money and where you want to live once you get it, you got to understand how much some of that is in terms of where you're going to go. Like, in some places, they're so serious about the community, you have to have a certain type of grass in the yard. Yes, I said it.
Yeah, your HOA, maybe strict.
Yeah. But also, and then when there's a civic league, they expect you to pay your dues for the civic league. You know, I mean, there's no if and if you're going to live in that community, there are, you know, what they have, those rules and regulations to maintain the decorum, the aesthetics, the overall style of living of where you are. When we think about that from an end of, like you said, entrepreneurship and finding out what you want to do, the late, great Kobe Bryant, because he had found his passion for, you know, two things. His daughter Gigi, you know, rest in peace as well, you know, her basketball, her budding basketball career, what she was going to end up becoming, and also him doing his films and documentaries, so one of which he won an Oscar for, you know. So you know, Kobe definitely was a controversial figure in terms of how he dealt with people on the court and sometimes off it. But there's one thing that can be said about it. That man was driven to be great. And you could see after he retired that he was, and even when he was playing, you know, you could see he was behind the scenes. They did an interview with him on Real Sports years ago. And he was talking then about how he was transitioning then in terms of what he was going to do after basketball. We look at Michael Jordan, you know, becoming the owner of the Charlotte, you know, buying a stake in Charlotte, franchise, Bobcats, and then eventually, you know, once he bought the controlling interest, it would end up being the Hornets, but now where she is the majority owner. Still the only black majority owner. Yeah.
You always got to have a plan B and C.
Exactly. Absolutely. when we think about it from that level of that, you know, understanding what comes next, you don't want a situation like what happened with Tiki Barber, you know, where he had the plan for what he was going to do after football, being a broadcaster, but then he got himself in some stuff that was bad public relations that ultimately cost him that opportunity. And then, you know what, 4 years later after he retired, he's trying to get back in the game where he's 36 years old. And it's like, you know, especially being a running back where they take the most punishment. And it's like, you know, dude, the stuff you said about Eli Manning didn't help either. So now there are character issues you have, you know, because, you know, people wonder like, yo, that's your quarterback. If there's a certain thing you got to say, you keep that private. But you don't air your mans out like that. Eli's just a good dude who's regular, and you want to make fun of him, saying when he tries to get loud, you know, he sounds funny like it's a joke. And I'm like, you do realize that when you're getting into the next thing, there's still a character issue. People don't know, and this is one thing people don't
understand. Yeah, people don't understand that. You understand, you got to move it. Especially when you black, you got to move with pins and needles.
Yeah, and be respectful
that bag,
more than
that
anything.
That bag can disappear within a snap of a finger just off a misquote or a retweet. Why you didn't catch me rushing Twitter? Well, I got hacked.
Yeah, you got to be conscious of that. Like, it's a lot more eyes out there, right? So you got to be conscious of that. You got to be on your seven. Honestly, like, you just got to always recognize, like, as you level up, you got more to lose. So, like, if you look around the room and you got the most to lose, then you're probably in the wrong room. You know what I'm saying? Like, you just have to really be. And that goes down to, like, the relationships you build, like, including the women that they choose. Like, you know, you got to really be conscious of who you're around. Yeah, because you just don't ever know, like, what another person's motive is. You know what I'm saying? Like, a lot of people will be looking for a come up, like you said. Like, we're in a realm of, like, what can I take from you? And so if you are in a relationship, whether that be a friendship, a girlfriend, whatever kind of relationship, even down to, like, your parents, if you're the only one adding value to that, then that's probably not something that you should try and continue as strongly as you are, because you just, that's where people go wrong. You know, we have big hearts, or we think because we have money or all of a sudden an athlete becomes rich, like, everybody should be able to take from them. And, like, what they don't realize is first FICA got to come. So first, you know, your taxes got to hit. Then, you know, any other fees got to take. And then, so it's like by the time they realize and look up and see what's ready left for them, it's like, nothing, you know. So you just have to sometimes, you know, I tell a lot of my guys, like, it's all right to be selfish. Like, be selfish.
Yeah.
Like, you only got one life to live. Yes, your parents got to help you get here. Okay, cool. Like, you got to give homage, pay homage where it's due. But be selfish, because you only have one life and you cannot take it with you. So whatever it is that you want to do, let's make sure we plan for that first. Like, if you say you want to have a family, okay, let's plan for that first. Let's make sure we get you out of the way, because grandma and uncles and cousins who want to start this and that and ask for this and that and all that, that's great, and we'll help them, but we got to get to you first. So I just hate to see that, you know, athletes put in all this hard work, labor, you know, sacrificing their bodies, their minds. And even, like, just their reputations, like, to be community-led heroes in a lot of towns. Like, we look up to our athletes, you know, just as much as we look up to, even more than what we look up to, like, our doctors, too. You know what I mean? So we have to, that's a lot of pressure. We have to understand that that's a lot of pressure, especially on somebody that's a teenager or, you know, a young adult. And then we also have to encourage them to care about themselves, because too often than not, they don't. And that's why they develop poor relationships, whether that be financially, you know, personally, business-wise, it doesn't really matter. All of those, we flow in an ecosystem of life, and all of those flow together. So I'm a firm believer of you got to be right holistically. Let's make sure we do that first, you know.
That's what you and Jeff Walker were talking about, and we're going to get into that actually right now. And, of course, we're going to talk what you and Matt Barnes talked about branding, because when you're looking at it from that side, the branding has always been an element of sport and hip-hop as well, because it's an extension of you. It's something that is marketable that ultimately helps push the brand. You know, we come from that era of the gangster rap era. Of course, you're from Detroit, Michigan, so of course you're familiar with these names, Esham, Eminem, you know, Trick Trick, you know, Exhibit was born in Detroit. A lot of people don't know that. You know, of course, and everybody knows about the streets with the Cheddar Boys, but those that know, they really know about that. You know, Blade Icewood, you know, Wipeout.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
We know that story, of course. BMF, shout out to
Detroit.
You
hear Detroit music, huh? Okay.
Yeah. I mean, of course, Duelle, the soul phenomenon, of course, Kim, you know, and Motown. I mean, of course, you know, Jerry Long, real name, Cocaine, you know. Yeah, the history you all have is long distinguished and legendary for what you all have brought to the culture from not only sport. I mean, look, you had Dave Bing, who ended up being mayor, you know, at one point,
mm-hmm.
you know. So it's, you know, we know about the streets, you know, the Best Friends, you know, the Chambers Brothers, you know, Maserati Rick, you know. Yeah, you know, we rock with y'all. You know, we got to shout out. Look, we have our guests on the show, we always want to show love to their hometown and the history that is, you know, associated with it, you know.
We definitely put in with them. We didn't start when 8 Mile was popping. We would click there with Detroit.
Yeah. Yeah, but like you said, you know, a lot of times athletes, you know, and we're not shading in Michigan State, you know, when we say this, but we got to get into branding. The situation that happened with Miles Bridges as of late, because even before the situation happened with his wife, we were already seeing the situations where he was posed up with a bottle of lean and then with a cup of lean, and it's like, you know, we're busting the hood. We looking at this like, dude, please don't take this where we think you're taking it. You know, because now we see that he want to be a rapper too, and he's not bad at it. But it's like, dude, be a baller first. you know, not everybody can necessarily concentrate on both, like Dame Dollar Lillard. You know, shout out to Oakland. You know, and Portland Trailblazers where he is. You know, it's like, but when you talk about branding, what you and Jeff had a conversation about the ecosystem of the people around you, and what you and Matt were talking about branding. Seeing you mentioned the ecosystem first, Morgan, let's talk about that a little bit before we get into actual branding, about how you are, how the image you put out. Let's get it.
Yeah, I think that they go into each other, so it's a good segue. I think that, you know, when you're creating that ecosystem around you, you have to consider, you know, your personal brand and what you want that to be, because that's how you create your ecosystem, right? What pieces do you need in order to brand yourself in the best way for you? And so I think that guys have to be, or just people in general, have to be more conscious of what, you know, what you put out, that's what people perceive from you. And so, you know, how you think you show up is not how you always show up in every room. And so sometimes you got to check in. Yeah, you got to check in, and you have to understand, okay, how does the room see me? How does the environment see me, right? Because you could think you're being one way, but because of all of the clouded messaging that you've created around your brand, nobody really understands where is your focus? Where does that lie? What are you trying to accomplish here? What impact are you trying to make? And so those are conscious questions that I always say, like, ask yourself. because that's how you then create the ecosystem. So the ecosystem consists of, you know, yourself as the CEO. You think of yourself as the CEO of your own brand. You're walking, talking. That's you. So who else do you need to support you? You need a chief financial officer. Boom. That's usually your, you know, your financial advisor. You need a manager. You need somebody to manage you day to day. So whether that's talent management or athlete management, or even if that's just an accountability partner, if you own a business, you know what I mean? I try and make my stuff relatable to every level. And then on top of that, you need somebody to execute, right? So you need a general manager. You need somebody that's going to go out and get the stuff done when you're not able to do that. And so I like to think of it as building a team. Your ecosystem is a team. We all work together. We all communicate with each other. There's no bottlenecks in the process. But at the end of the day, the mission is to lead the company forward, drive business. So if you're the CEO of your own brand, our job is to lead and drive your brand forward, right? And so I think that's the key that LeBron, people like LeBron or Jay-Z, they really mastered. Yeah. And they understand that, and the people around them understand that. They believe in what they have established as the CEO of their own brand. And so they're all walking lock in step to achieve and accomplish what is next for them. I mean, a lot of people don't give enough credit to, like, Kevin Hart, same situation. You know, you have to surround yourself by an ecosystem that supports you and believes in the vision, especially if you're going to establish yourself as a CEO. A lot of people don't really understand what it takes to establish yourself as a CEO. And so when you look at Walmart, when you look at, you know, Target, when you look at these big Tesla, when you look at companies like this, what is the CEO doing? You know, they're the visionary, but everybody else really believes in the mission, and so that's what's really driving the bottom line. And then you win regardless. And so that's what I really want for people to understand is, like, whatever you create your brand to be, make sure that your ecosystem supports and believes in that as much as you do, so in order to grow and really succeed.
Definitely, because one thing about it, and for those that got to understand it, because I'm a tree hugger, you know, a proud recycler ever since I was young, the ecosystem is your environment. It's the active environment of which you're allowed to thrive. You know, you do not want a situation where you have pollutants to get in the way of disrupting the flow, because when you have the wrong elements, then it becomes polluted. You have predators. There is a Japanese proverb, an assassin rarely comes from a distance. And when you have the wrong people in your circle who have access to your innermost resources, that is where things happen, because there could be jealousy, there's envy, there's greed, there's gluttony, and not in that order. When we look at those things, it's a lot. That's why, you know, whether you're an artist, whether you're an athlete, always know who your circle is. Know who your family is. You know, because you got some people that mm-hmm. their whole thing is they just want to be there just for the ride. You know, but if there's a collision, mm-hmm. you know, or the gas runs out, they ain't going to help you push or help you get to the hospital if something happens. You know, but it's also, that's why you have, it's like, I remember when LeBron, when he first came out and he had an agent. And then pretty much, I think in his second year, he fired his agent and, you know, put Maverick Carter, who he's known his whole life, along with Drew Joyce. You know, these are his guys, you know, he was, playing basketball with. They want a team, and he basically made those guys his day-to-day financial management and, agent, you know, and by the grace of God, it has worked out. They really have a real bond and a real brotherly love and trust with each other. Not everybody has that like that. That's why, once again, we stress, know who you are around. We saw Broke, Andre Rison, who would talk about, you know, how he would walk in and there'd just be a whole entourage. He'd have his whole entourage with him,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it's like, like you said, Morgan, there's nothing wrong with being selfish within reason, because if you made it, it doesn't mean be a dick, but it also means take care of what you have. So, because the only way you can help others is if you are helping yourself first.
Yeah.
You know, and, You know, but a lot of times, you know, they want to bring everybody out from the hood. But I'm like, it's like what happened with Michael Vick when we watched the documentary on the 30 for 30 on ESPN with him. And, you know, he had a couple of his people, but, you know, they weren't doing nothing. And one of his partners, you know, who was with him, he could have basically, he went to Virginia Tech with him to just hang out. I'm like, dude, with that fool Mike had, he could have got him in school. And dude could have just been, he could have been a student and just learned something. You know,
yeah.
I mean, we're not going to act like it don't happen. Mike could have pulled some strings like, yo, you know, can you get my mans a little bit of financial aid, a little scholarship on the side for something? And we're not saying that to throw shade. It's just like if you got people around you, you want to know that they are doing something for themselves outside of you being their primary source of income. Because it's going to be a bad outcome. You know, you don't want people just hangers around, like you said, especially with the women. And we love our black women. We love women of all races. We'll tell anybody black, brown, green, purple, no matter the color. Know the women you deal with. Because especially in this era, for some women, not all, but you got a lot of women, and it's really nothing's changed over the years for how the game is played. Where people got where there's an opportunity, you got people that are going to go for it, and they're going to leech. You know, and you don't, male or female, You don't want nobody around you that's just basically going to take, and they have nothing to offer in terms of giving anything substantial, credible, meaningful, or genuine. You can't buy loyalty, but money will buy you a lot of tragedy if you do not know how to negate the drama and write your script to where it is directed, you know, properly. Now, when we get to the part about the NIL deals, what are you seeing now in terms of how this is coming, where a lot of these college athletes are going to be able to monetize themselves in terms of name, image, likeness, and how do we get out in front of it to make sure that once again the babies, because these are still kids, these are our babies, these are our children coming up, how do we make sure that they have a solid footing and foundation so that they understand if by the time some of them do make it to the pros that they already have a template of safety set for sensible spending and living?
Oh, man, I think that NIL was probably one of the greatest blessings. Yeah, the least amount of framework that I've ever seen rolled out as far as a program. But the way that they did it was tremendously unfair, of course. But I think that with time, everything gets better. I'm just glad that something was done. I think that it's an amazing opportunity to be able to live and gain off of, you know, your hard work and labor from, you know, being in high school all the way through, you know, to you're an adult. You know, that earning income that guys miss is essential, especially because some of them have families at that age, you know. Some of them are trying to support children while playing in college, while, you know, it's very difficult, especially if you can't work. And so I think that it's incredible. But to your point, you know, the regulations are not set up in a way where they provide, you know, they even let them know some of the repercussions, like you have to have a loan out corp, otherwise you're shooting yourself in the foot, and you have to have, you know, save money for taxes, you have to have an accountant. There's just, like, you're giving high school students, like, a bunch of money, but you're not telling them what they need to do with it, make sure that they do with it so that they don't get in trouble later. And so I think that they're creating a lot of, they can create a lot of issues, like, but the thing about it is that adults have all the power, right? Because in the music industry or in film and entertainment, children have been making money for years.
That's true.
I mean, Michael
that
Jackson was one of the youngest stars in the entire world. And
Justin
so,
Bieber, Taylor Swift, yeah.
Yeah, so when we look at industries like that that have been able to develop from kids that are, you know, 5, 6, 7, you know, that are singing and performing and acting, you know, as babies in movies, we've seen that there is a level of protection that they provide for them. Why? Because most of those children are not black. So, of course, they're going to have a certain level of protection, you know, up until, you know, starting from a younger age. That was all put in place for them, where like 20% has to go into, 20% of their earnings has to go in a specific account that they can't spend until they're 18. Those type of stipulations should have definitely been put on high school student athletes that are learning, that are about to be earning in NIL deals, especially some sort of requirement that if a brand issues a contract to them, they have to make sure that they already have hired an accountant or a tax accountant, or that they'll pay for tax services. There has to be something in there to let them know that, okay, you could really harm your financial future if you don't do X, Y, and Z. And I think that that part about it is the most daunting and scary thing, not just as a service professional, but also as a mother. I couldn't imagine if somebody gave my child that amount of money and, you know, I didn't have the knowledge or wherewithal to know that, okay, we need to set aside this amount for taxes. We need to put this in this account. We need to make sure that you have an LLC set up so when they're making the checkout, they're not making it directly to you. They're making it to your company. You know, just setting up certain things. Yeah, just setting up in certain things so that, you know, that these children can actually win with the money, not just have a bunch of money in their pocket to go buy Yeezys, which I would hate to see happen. You know what I mean? And so, yeah, I think that the NIL deals are an incredible opportunity for kids because and well-deserved. But I also think that a lot of what adults have put together is not in best interest of these kids at all. And I just wish that, you know, somebody would really step in and say, like, hey, these are all of the experiences we're having, because there has to be a change. And, I mean, I know it'll come and it'll evolve, but it's just sad to see that, you know, so many black people are going to be affected by this, you know. It's not.
Right.
So it's unfortunate, but, yeah.
Definitely.
I know we running on time and everything like that, because, you know, you got places, things, and you got things to do. And we appreciate definitely the build of the gyms that you gave us. Now, do you have any shout outs you want to give out before we let you go?
Yeah, I mean, I would love to shout out the Future Game. So if anybody wants to know where to find some of the conversations that we speak of, and then just some of the professionals that also help on my team service these clients, search the Future Game by MGO. MGO is my company. I want to shout them out. They co-sponsored the Future Games production for me, and they've been really instrumental in helping me build out my team and my efforts. I always got to shout out my daughter because she's my inspiration. So shout out to Bella.
Baby.
And, I just want to make sure that all of your listeners know that I'm an extension of the best parts of myself, always and foremost. So if anybody ever is looking for to find me, you can find me on LinkedIn, Morgan Stinson, or you can find me on Instagram if you search the Future Game. I'm there too. But any type of advice, please, you know, always reach out. And yeah, I'm here. My door is always open, especially to people in my community. So I appreciate y'all for having me. And I really enjoyed the conversation. I learned a bit because even though you were like, I know you remember, I was like, ooh, I don't remember that, all of that. But I do remember some of the stories that you were sharing. So thank you for educating me. I got some research to do on my own too. And yeah, I mean, enjoy this beautiful Friday. I'm eager to watch in the NBA Summer League game. So, yeah, shout out to them. Make sure you guys tune in and watch these young boys, you know, show their talent, because I think that 2022 is going to be – and 2023 season is going to be an incredible one to watch. So make sure you all tune into the NBA Summer League.
Yeah, before we go too, Morgan, we got to shout out you – Jessica Holtz, and Sandra Douglas Morgan. Of course, for those who don't know, for Raider Nation, Sandra Douglas Morgan recently became not only the first woman as a team president, she's the first black woman. Of course, Jessica Holtz, who was Karl Anthony Towns and Devin Booker's agent for the Timberwolves and Suns, respectively, she got them two max contracts. And, of course, you, with your tremendous company, your extraordinary talent, the acumen, the professionalism, the vision that you have, the overarching radiance of optimism and wisdom that you give. Morgan, you know you're welcome back with us anytime, because we definitely got to get you back on the breakdown how you really started your company, you know, from the ground up, and, you know, how you really got it to where it is today, of which you are a monumental movement that is still making statements and, you know, in the pavement of business. Keep building. You know, Off the Cuff Radio is behind you 1,000%. You know, we're just a phone call away if you need us for anything. And once again, thank you so much. Peace and God bless. And you and your daughter, you know, you and your whole team, we got love for all y'all. Keep doing what y'all doing, promoting black excellence and cultural awareness and community building. Thank you so much.
Thank you. All righty, guys. Enjoy your weekend.
Appreciate you. Enjoy yours as well.
Thank you.
King, take us out of here.
On that note, we up out of here. Catch y'all same time, same place next week.
We out. God bless. Peace. One.